CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is time for the burning platform right here on CliffCentral.com. Thursday mornings. All the stories that are happening, the stories that affect you and me and the world. Oh, we've done different hair arrangement during those 2 minutes.
New hair arrangement.
Look at you.
And I just realized, because somebody was rude here on the comments last week when I was putting on lipstick.
Why were
at
they
the
rude?
Beginning. I don't know.
Don't they see women just putting on lipstick? That's what women do.
Like, putting on lipstick, I can feel my lips getting chapped.
Everything is so controversial these days. You can't even put on lipstick, huh, Pums? Wow. Okay, so you got a lot to talk about this morning. There is so much going on. Let me, because we're getting Canton and Bafana Modise in this morning, but let me ask you, because we haven't really spoken, and last week we had so much.
Last week was one of my favorite shows ever.
You enjoyed it?
I did. One of my favorite shows ever. But because last week was still so raw, I think. Last week was still, at least for me, completely in shock around everything that was happening with Israel.
Yes.
And we spoke about this. And I said to you, a week prior to that, nobody could have ever foreseen this. Although now that I've had the week to kind of calm down and think on it, I think they probably did. But this is the problem when you have a government that is so distracted.
Are you talking about Israel now?
Israel.
Yeah.
They've been so distracted with all of Netanyahu's shenanigans.
And that
they were not paying attention.
Reform of the justice system, and there were protests all over Israel. And yeah, there was a lot going on.
Protests every other day.
Yeah, people were talking about how fractious the internal politics of Israel are at the moment. And I mean, this is not even a controversial thing to say, because every Israeli will tell you that that's the truth. In fact, in some ways, and it's horrible to think about this, but politicians, like in this case Netanyahu, who I don't particularly have a problem with, a lot of people do, they love, I mean, he doesn't love the fact that people died, obviously, unless he's a complete psychopath, but they like these crises because it gives people pause to support and get behind the nation, etc., at a time where the internal differences are put aside.
Although I don't think it's going to save him.
You don't think so?
I don't think this is good. This is not like Margaret Thatcher's Balkan crisis, right? This is not going to save him, because I think this is going to go on for a long time. There is so much bloodshed, and we are watching this war. I think this is like the first time really that we're watching this war in an age of social media in the way that it is.
Well, you could argue that for Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah,
you could
but argue it was that not. For, Afghanistan and Iraq was not the way that
Russia,
this is.
Russia, Ukraine?
Not the way that this is playing out. You know, the way that this is playing out is, so if you think about what's happened in the last 48 hours with the hospital.
Oh, wow. That's a whole story on its own.
If you think about what's happened in the last 48 hours with the hospital, where there is so much disinformation.
Right.
And there is so much chaos that almost on a not even an hourly basis, almost
minute by
every
minute.
20 minutes, yeah. There is a new breaking story. There is on the ground footage. There are
lies. There are big propaganda lies that are happening.
Big lies. So what we know for sure right now is we cannot trust anything coming out of Hamas, and we cannot trust anything coming out of the IDF. Because at the moment, you're not sure, you know, so.
Well, let's just explain to people what happened with that hospital, because that's an interesting story. So initially the story was, and the AP reported it directly from Hamas. They said, a hospital has been shelled and bombed by the IDF. 500 people are dead. That's what we heard. And everyone goes, oh my God. Because obviously, no one's going, yay, civilians are dead. No one.
A hospital. This is where people, you know.
Unless you're a monster. So initially, and you had people all over social media then using this as like, you see Israel are just absolute war criminals, blah, 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 blah. Give it a bit of time. Then it starts becoming about how, no, this is one of Hamas's own rockets.
This was an internal rocket that misfired, a rocket coming from Hamas towards Israel. It misfired and it hit the hospital.
And
so
by
it
the
wasn't
way,
a direct hit.
By the way,
way,
a fair percentage of the missiles that are fired out of Gaza land in Gaza. This is something not a lot of people are keen to talk about, but it happens. And for Hamas, it's like, casualties are casualties, right? Anyway, changes again just a little while later, and it turns out not to have been a hospital at all, but an abandoned parking lot. Now, there may have still been people hurt. There may have still been people killed. I don't like the idea of us talking about how many were killed, because I think that that's quite pointless. One death is too many if it's an innocent civilian. But
then the fake news footage, right? So this is Al Jazeera were actually on the ground filming at the time. And when you look at this, then you have the IDF. This is the trajectory of all of the rockets over that period of time in this bit. Then you, and all of it from minute to minute.
Are you trying to ape our president and the are you trying to upset everybody here, Canton?
Canton is getting Canton his props ready.
Canton has a yarmulke and a kefir on. What are you trying to say? What is this?
It's a Palestinian scarf. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you've got a kefir and a yarmulke.
Absolutely.
Are you just trying to upset everyone at once?
No, I'm actually trying to show solidarity with both sides of this conflict, which I think...
Are you able to, or is that moral equivalence, Bafana? Let's find out. I've got so much to talk about here.
Yeah, I think you have to just decide which one are you on, or you want to be solidarity with both of them.
No, I'm absolutely in solidarity with people on the ground on both sides.
Okay.
I have complete contempt for the utter fuckheads who are running the overall strategy on both sides of this conflict. And I think that that's a good starting point for us to have. Could you ask the comment section whether I can take off my glasses now?
Yes, you can take off your glasses.
All right, okay.
Thank you, Captain. All right, so there we go. Controversial start to the burning platform, but what did you expect? I mean, did you really think it was going to be easy pickings this morning? So we got a full lineup. Let's just introduce everybody. So Bafana, first of all, Pumi corrected my pronunciation of Tsoha Mocha.
Yes.
Okay, Tsoha Mocha. Because it's Tsoha not Mocha. Pronounced like mocha. I could have told you that.
I'm sorry. I just immediately see that.
Mocha, didn't
I immediately see that.
No,
you
didn't say mocha. You did not.
What is it? What is it? Tsoha Mocha.
No, he did not say
all right.
Mocha, guys.
Okay, don't get this. We actually have real things to talk about.
We have work to do, yeah.
Just by the way.
Just arriving so late had, and just causing all of this
chaos.
I
had Penwell Mlotshwa in the studio yesterday, and I said to him, why is it that South Africa, and we've just proven we are not above this, South Africa is so easily distracted, right? While this whole thing in the Middle East is happening, people are talking about Dr. Matthew and Jada Pinkett, and we've fallen into that trap too on this show, so we're no better.
It's not just South Africans, man. It's how our brains work. Our brains, when things are too difficult, our brains, like, try and...
You know, it's one thing to have a doctor...
Speak
for yourself, Pumi. Who's not even qualified, but to have a Department of Health endorsing that kind of a doctor, that was kind of worrying. A whole Department of Health actually saying, our brain is shining star, only to find out that the man's not even a doctor. Yeah, South
All
Africa.
Right, so Bafana is a broadcaster and activist for social justice, a former SRC president. You were in ANC then?
Yes. I was leading SASCO by then, yes.
But you have reformed.
I've seen the light.
And you are head of communications at the South African Friends of Israel. What is the South African Friends of Israel?
South African Friends of Israel is a movement of South Africans who are totally opposed to the ANC stance on this conflict. We believe that a two-state solution is the only solution. And I don't think that choosing sides and actually imposing your ideological position on the majority of South Africans is the right way to go about it. I think you should rather be, as one thing about Nelson Mandela, he had a relationship with both sides, and he chose a diplomatic position for both Palestine and Israel. So ANC lately has been more Palestinian and anti-Israel, and they are literally like just yesterday.
You can even argue rather that Naledi Pando is pro Hamas.
Dude, he called Hamas. How do you call a terrorist organization? It's appalling. Clearly, we are moving to South Africans.
So this is interesting because you know, surely the starting point towards ending a conflict is to actually have an open channel of communication.
True.
So you're saying that it's wrong for Naledi Pando, who has, you know, put forward a statement that actually says that there needs to be a peaceful resolution to this conflict, and that South Africa is willing to act as an honest broker.
How does
South Africa do that if they don't have an open channel of communication?
But how do you do that when you've already said, I'm taking this side? You can't call
him. Well, I'm actually disagreeing.
He could have called.
I'm disagreeing.
She could have called the PA. She could have called the Palestinian Authority or Mahmoud Abbas as a minister, not a terrorist organization.
No, but the perps in this case is Hamas.
No, but
they are the perps. Okay, let's agree.
It's
on
a terrorist organization.
Okay. Hamas is a terrorist organization.
True, we agree on that.
Okay.
So what is the whole minister doing calling a terrorist organization then?
Because how do you open a channel of communication? Because it's not the Palestinian Authority that's firing these rockets in this particular case.
But
it's Hamas.
True.
So how can you call the Palestinian Authority and tell Hamas to stop this? No, actually, Hamas has contempt for the Palestinian Authority.
But by the mere fact that, listen, this is not new. Last year here, we had a Hamas leader right in the ANC conference here in Nazareth. So they have had this TMT meetings with Hamas for a very long time. And that is not in any way towards building or making yourself a partner to broker peace between these two people.
Between the
Israelis and the Palestinians.
No, it's not Israel and the Palestinians. It's Israel and Hamas, because Hamas are the perps.
You don't get my point. There is a government of the Hamas of Palestine.
Brokering peace for the PA is not going to end up with
or rather engage
with
Qatar.
But this is the
Qatar
thing that we were talking about, Gareth, earlier, sure, where I said to you that there are so many interests in this conflict that it is difficult to really be able to take a bird's eye view of it and say, this is how the conflict is going to be solved, because there are so many moving parts and so many interests and so many different motivations. So if you consider that Hamas's motivation, backed by Iran, is to destroy Israel, right?
I think it's even simpler than that. It's not so much about destroying Israel, because the incursions and the violence and the civilian deaths that we saw on Saturday just a week ago, let's not forget, were not aimed at territorial expansion or at damaging infrastructure. It was about killing Jews. That's what it was.
That's it.
They didn't. Hang on a second. They didn't only kill Jews. Okay, they killed Israeli Arabs as well.
They killed international people from like 50 countries.
This was indiscriminate slaughter. You know, yes, their stated objective was to kill Jews. But
says that's what they are believing,
it was absolutely indiscriminate. Yeah,
I just think so. Canton, I mean, you're a big gun guy, and you believe in being able to defend your property.
Yes,
I think if someone walks into my house because they've got some beef with me over, I don't know, mineral rights, or I dumped a wheelbarrow load of stuff on their side, or I've got in the way of their servitude, or whatever their gripe is with me. Someone walks into my house and murders a child of mine, or tries to kidnap my wife, or does kidnap my wife. I think I'm entitled to be just a little more than slightly pissed off and take whatever action.
Well, I think whether or not you're entitled to it doesn't matter. I know what I would do in that situation.
What would you do?
I would get medieval on their asses.
Right. That's what happens now.
To quote Pulp Fiction. But you see, the problem is that when we live in the moment at that level, so let's agree on this concept, okay? You're coming into my house and you're targeting my family.
I'm provoked.
Yeah. But the fundamental problem that we're dealing with in this conflict is the question of the fact that the person who is coming in and saying that you've stolen my house all these years ago and I want it back.
But
so,
then,
so, no, but no, then, so, so, wait, no, wait, 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 let me,
let's
let
talk about
no,
Gaza.
No, no,
Hamas
wait,
is in Gaza,
no, no,
right? Israel left Gaza 2005. So
let me finish this.
Am I still taking your land when I've left it? Just like they say, don't keep your land.
So
this is my, this
I'm
is your territory.
I'm going to ask you guys a question, all of you present here right now, okay? What are the borders of Israel? What are the borders of Israel?
Since the 40s. What do you mean?
What is your question, Pesach? I mean,
my question is, are there borders for Israel?
Yes.
No, they're not.
On the west, the Mediterranean is a fairly safe border for Israel.
No, there are no borders of Israel. And I'll tell you why there are no borders of Israel, okay? The only purported borders in terms of the Israel conflict goes back to 1949 when there was an armistice. Okay, now an armistice is basically an agreement to cease hostilities. And there was a green line that was drawn that demarcated beyond which conflict should not take place. True. There has never been a formal border that has been drawn up.
But
No, wait.
No,
The reason why this is crucial, okay, and understand that to a large extent, I'm a friend of Israel as well. So keep that at the back of your mind.
Yes, for those who've just tuned in, he's wearing a kefir, but he's also got a yarmulke under those headphones.
Absolutely, so. Yes. Yeah. So when you have, and it's exactly Kipper. The same scenario that we have in between North Korea and South Korea. There isn't a border, okay, from the point of view of—
Canton, how much of this is technical and semantic?
It's not technical and semantic at the point at which you try and say there needs to be peace in this place. But you can't have an agreement on what the basis is of what the peace should be. And until we can get some sort of global agreement around this stuff, this is going to be an ongoing conflict between the children of Abraham who are tracing this conflict back to the fact in terms of whether Abraham wanted to sacrifice his firstborn son or whether he wanted to sacrifice his legal son. Mm. And no one is stopping to ask, why the fuck did Abraham not sacrifice himself instead? Which is the crucial question.
Or as Hitchens says, isn't that the beginning of immorality rather than monotheism?
Exactly.
All right. Before we get into the reads, because there's a lot here. I want Bafana to have a chance to reply to you because you put a lot out there. And I want us to try and keep this tidy so that by the end of it, we emerge with some better understanding rather than another source of conflict, another example, and I don't mean this in any way disparagingly to any of you, but I'm just so tired of seeing another fight on TV between a pro-Palestinian and an Israeli having an argument about land, for example, which reminds me in a haunting sort of way of some of the things that go on here when it comes to land. And they're not.
It's an absolutely fair comparison, Gareth.
I think it is a fair comparison because there's a lot of confusion around the legal entitlement to land, the historical attachment to land, whether land gives people dignity. There's a lot of stuff that we've still got to deal with in this country, and maybe in some ways we have, but that they are dealing with in a very similar fashion over there. So, Bafana, first things first, you get to reply to Canton. He made a lot of points there. Where do you want to start?
Okay, I would love to start with this part. In 1949, as you said, there was a green line, right? And from 1948, from 49 until 67, Egypt controlled Gaza. Jordan controlled the West Bank. They didn't create a Palestinian state. And there was no even a push to create a Palestinian state. Rather, what they did afterwards, after 19 years in power in those territories, they still wanted to attack. So I don't know whether the war is about the land itself or it's about the Jewish presence in the land. And that's why most Jews are convinced that, you know what, we are not fighting a war of territory here. We are fighting a war where our neighbors, before they have united against us to unleash war on us. Second time in 67, 73, you can count all those years where Arab states...
I'm 100% in agreement with you on everything so far.
Yes. So, so the question then becomes to say, maybe the issue is not about land. Maybe the issue is about radicalism, religious extremists, religious radicalism to a point where some, even now Hamas, when they attacked Israel, now they said they were going to liberate Al-Aqsa. It was not even about land or rights or civil rights. It was more about we are going to liberate Al-Aqsa Mosque. So we cannot just reduce this battle to a mere land or to a human rights issue. There is an... you cannot have Iran clapping hands in Tehran over what is happening in Israel. I think the Arab...
But you've had the U.S. clapping hands over what's been happening in Israel for how many years?
I mean... that's not the point.
I understand we're 100% in agreement on everything that you've said so far.
True.
So my point of departure, very simply, guys, okay, is how do we fix this?
Before we get to that, because
we're going into who's right and who's wrong.
But we have tried this before. Remember, in 2008, when Ehud El Olmert said, you know what, I'll give 90% of the West Bank back to the Palestinians. If Jerusalem will be the capital of the new Palestinian state, what happened? Maybe you can educate me on that. Yeah, they said no to that. So they were actually given about, what they've been fighting for all these years.
So the Palestinians still had elections. No. Okay, the Palestinians had elections. The Palestinian Authority,
this is back in 2005.
Mm. Yeah, yes. One on the West Bank. But Hamas had a plurality in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Hamas had 42% of the vote in Gaza.
Yes.
All right. Hamas then effectively took power in Gaza and proceeded to slaughter all of their opponents, their political opponents, okay, which is what terrorist groups do. Can we agree on this?
Absolutely.
Okay. And that's why Malaysia didn't call them.
Right. So now we've got this fractured situation where you've got Gaza, which is ruled by Hamas effectively, and you have the West Bank, you know, which kind of just like sits there and, you know, every so often kind of raises its head in feeble protest. But the West Bank, the PLO, has always been this fundamentally corrupt organization in much the same way that the ANC is a corrupt organization today. So
I surmise that's one of the reasons they're friends.
Yeah. So yeah,
it makes sense.
Well, consider that there were Palestinians that I actually had very close interaction with. So the late Edward Said, for example, wrote a seminal work called Orientalism. And, you know, I really recommend that people go and look for this book and read it. Mm. I first met Said back in the day in the U.S. and maintained contact with him up until the time of his death. And he parted ways with the PLO because of their corruption. So these are the two pieces of the puzzle that we've got.
And while you're on that, it's worth also mentioning that Hamas has done absolutely nothing to improve the condition of any single citizen except the leadership themselves, who happily are ensconced in, where is it, Qatar?
In Qatar right now, okay, in a five-star hotel.
So every time, and Israel's been responsible for supplying water and electricity largely. I mean, listen, Gaza is an isolated strip with no real ability to, no porous borders anywhere, right? So people often talk on the Palestinian side about, in inverted commas, an open-air prison and all of this stuff. And there may be some veracity to that. There may be some questions we could talk about the way people live there. But Hamas, as the government there, have not made a single effort to improve the lives of their own people, to build any infrastructure. Every cent that they seem to get.
Oh, no, they've built infrastructure, but it's infrastructure.
Terrorist infrastructure.
Yes, it's infrastructure.
Tunnels, missiles.
Tunnels, missiles. I mean, their production systems out there are absolutely superb.
So Hamas has by no means been an exemplary government. And
no,
they say in the most recent research that they've done, that between 50 and 57% of the people in Gaza support Hamas. Now, many of them would do that at gunpoint because what do you say if you live in Gaza?
But also, yeah. I think there's also an indoctrination that comes around it, right?
Yeah, but we all get indoctrinated.
Yes, my point exactly.
But there's something particularly slimy about like teaching kids in school that Jews are apes.
Yeah, my point exactly. Jews are apes.
And monkeys.
Sons of the devil. Yeah, and pigs. They drink blood of whatever.
I grew up during the apartheid era. We had Swat Kafar, put into our heads all the time. We had Roy Kafar put into our heads all the time.
Yes.
Indoctrination is what every single country does. And I think what we should avoid doing is get down to is to deny agency to the Palestinian people. We can take the view that they support Hamas, and that's okay. Whether they indoctrinated or not,
the question is, do we want to solve it? And what does solving it look like?
Well, that brings us
That brings me to the question, and go for it. Tell us how we solve it.
No, I mean, it's very clear. We've been talking about the two-state solution for a very long time right now, right? Right. No, they can decide amongst themselves to say, from this point to this point, Israelis and Palestinians. They can decide.
Yeah, but then you need to negotiate with Hamas, which is the starting point of our conversation.
But we don't negotiate with terrorists.
Hamas don't want to negotiate.
You don't negotiate with terrorists.
Thank you, Gareth. That's exactly the point.
But more than that, though.
Yes.
So can I just jump in and say what this conflict has also taught us all, what it's shown us all, is that there are no adults in the room here. So you talk about...
Are you just talking about this room or that room as well?
I'm the adult in this room. But the reality is that what we also don't have is we also don't have, on a world scale, on a global scale, anybody who is able to pick up the phone and have a conversation on either side.
Yes,
whichever
we do.
Side
Putin has done that.
Really?
Hold on. You spoke earlier about Madiba and being because that's who he was. We do not currently have an elder statesman, whether it is in the UN or the US or South Africa or even Russia.
True.
Or even Russia, who is able to bring all sides, and there are not two sides here. There are multiple sides. Whether you're talking about why Egypt is not allowing civilians into Egypt, out of the danger zone,
it's
into
because
Egypt.
They know that Hamas are crazy guys who are actually going to start fomenting insurrection within
Hamas,
Egypt. And for the same reason that Jordan will not allow Palestinians into Jordan.
You don't think it will make sense that then both states around there unite against Hamas and you're rid of it?
They won't, though.
They won't.
But it wouldn't make sense.
Though. It would, if in an ideal world.
In an ideal
and
world.
If your
say,
aunt had balls, she would have been your uncle.
Yeah. Because the problem that I find with this, right, is that Hamas is the main obstacle. They used to say settlements is a main obstacle to peace. But Hamas is the main obstacle to peace right now. Because if we don't have anyone willing to engage and anyone saying, you know what, We are the representative of the Palestinian people, and we would love to see peace in this view. And how can we work around it? Maybe we are looking at something. Saudi Arabia maybe could have been a good broker. It seems like it's a big brother, but certainly Hamas is a friend of Iran.
Well, that's another meta narrative. Right? That, you know, no. This is good because what happened there is that essentially Saudi Arabia and Israel were getting to a point where they would have been normalizing, in inverted commas, relations. Mm. It was a big threat to Iran. Iran was like, if we're going to press the button, it might as well be now. Hamas is going to do this. Now, what about this theory?
Sure.
What about the theory that all of this that has happened was actually unintended? Like, let's just for a minute assume that Hamas was given support and the green light by Iran, but for a small thing to happen because they assumed Israeli countermeasures would be so successful that they wouldn't get as far as they did. Let's imagine for a second that, let's say that this was more wildly successful than Hamas had imagined it could be. That they were guessing maybe they'd be able to like make some holes in the fence, get a little way in, and the Israelis...
But Gareth, I'm disputing that fundamental thing. And you see the reason why I'm disputing it, okay? For the longest time in the world, we've had this idea of U.S. exceptionalism and Israeli exceptionalism in military terms. And that's because of the fact that for the longest time, they've been able to substantially outgun everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the carpet bombing strategy has been highly effective. Now, let's use, for example, the question of the Iron Dome. Mm-hmm. The Iron Dome is a fabulous piece of technology. And I've written about it. I've sung its praises. The Iron Dome has a 99% accuracy, in terms of taking out enemy missiles. So that means if you have 100 incoming missiles, one of them is going to get through.
Mm-hmm.
True.
When you have a situation where Hamas is firing 6,000 rockets simultaneously. Sure. There is no way. Okay, so the concept of Hamas, you know, unexpectedly stumbling. No, this was planned. And again,
it was planned, but
don't focus on Israeli exceptionalism. Israel was caught flat-footed. They didn't take the lessons that were learned in Ukraine, where Russia did exactly the same thing. All of the American missile defense systems, the Patriots and so forth, they just swarmed them with very small drones. And at the point at which you're able to see then where the firing is coming from, you then target that missile defense system and take it out. And that is going to be the new warfare strategy around the world going forward. Okay. So now this comes back to my question, all right? And the strategy has worked very well for Israel up until now.
What, the Iron Dome system?
No, not the Iron Dome system. That whenever Hamas gets too far out of line, you just go in and...
What they say, mow the lawn.
Mow the lawn, as they put it, and then you effectively disable them for a period. Mm. But what's been happening over the longest time now, okay, is that the technology has been moving, not exponentially, geometrically. Mm. So you've now got the ability of Hamas itself to produce drone capacity on the ground at a significantly faster rate than Israel can put in Iron Dome defense systems. Because remember, each of those missiles that the Iron Dome defense system fires costs $150,000 each of them single-handedly.
Sure.
And you have to now face that off against the fact that Hamas is turning out drones that are effectively costing hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars. So the reason why I keep coming back to the question is of what is the solution? Because if we're not recognizing the path that the technology is currently taking, then Israel is toast. Just simply because of the sheer volume of incoming missiles that Israel will not be able to keep up with, unless they end up resorting to nukes, and then we've got World War III.
Not really. I think maybe just to agree with you on the idea that this was planned. You know, it was not just they got the Jews.
They said 2 years.
Yes, like in 73 when they attacked on Yom Kippur, right? It was the Jewish holiday, and nobody thought that there would be war anytime soon. Just like now, it was the Feast of the Tabernacles.
Simchat Torah.
Yeah, Simchat Torah. And then right there, where Jews were celebrating, I mean, young boys and girls were dancing in clubs, and all overnight, they were abducted somewhere. Some are still held hostage in Gaza. So this was well planned to say, we attack with the... We attack with missiles and rockets, and you're gonna go in and take what is that community, Olifakim, the village there that was completely destroyed, babies burnt up, and all of that. So for me, I tend to think that Israel still has. I think now they've learned from this, but I think the military capability of the Israeli state is very much strong. I don't think that Hamas will ever.
And
ever,
that's the point I disagree with.
We will see about
it. Pumi, what do you want to throw in here? Because you've been sitting there, and I'm sure you have some things to add.
Pumi is the Busisiwa Mkwebane of this conversation.
Don't insult her.
Go for it.
This conversation and as you rightly said, Gareth, is all that we've been seeing everywhere is we're just seeing these counter offenses, and without looking at a broader and more nuanced conversation that says there are more interests on the ground than what we're all looking at. We're kind of looking Palestine, Israel, or Israel, Iran and Israel, or even, you know, Qatar, Egypt, all of the various people. But we actually need to be looking at all of them on a 360 model, right? As we need to be looking at each and every single player in this fight and what their motivation is and what they get out of it. Because this is the thing about wars, right?
But I also have to say that this is not a war that Israel asked for. And I think that's a major component of
Israel
this.
Is at a constant state of war because they are surrounded completely on every side by enemy forces. They are in a
whose avowed purpose is there at a destruction.
Annihilation.
Exactly.
No. The only Jewish state in the world is surrounded on every side by people who want to destroy it. So they are in a constant state of war. But because they have been so distracted by their internal politics, they have not, and you know, people have been talking, is this like a Pearl Harbor, right? They didn't see it coming. Was the intelligence there? And what we know now, you know, is that maybe the intelligence was there. Maybe Netanyahu knew that this was coming. But because he was so focused on saving his own damn ass, he wasn't interested in making the right moves. And what that has done is it has weakened him.
I think also the focus on Iran, I think Israel has spent so much time focusing on Iran because there's been making these threats to say we are coming after you. And also this judicial overhaul politics internally within Israel. That was one thing that made us lose the plot in terms of you anticipate the Hamas attack. I mean, we didn't see it coming. We thought Iran might attack, or we didn't even... Iran was
the
most
obvious.
And the
truth of the matter is that nobody is going to come out on the other side of this looking good. Because on either side, there have been so many atrocities
that it has completely, for me,
and I said to you last week, Gareth, is that I feel like this particular conflict in this moment in time in the world is debasing all of us, whether it is you're seeing people's heads being blown off on social media, right? Or you are Israel looking like you're attacking hospitals, or you are Hamas not allowing civilians out of conflict zones, or you are Egypt not allowing refugees into your country. Fuck. It's a shit show. And everybody comes out on the other side of losing.
I think that's right. But I'm also tired of moral equivocation and the idea that this is actually a both sides situation. You have people saying absolutely stupid things, like, for example, well, I'm against any deaths. Like, oh, so you're against bad things. I mean, like, that's a position. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Canton? It's like, it's just so, it's so facile to say things like,
Gareth,
I'm against all deaths.
Can all of us agree that what Hamas did was an atrocity? And these guys, there needs to be a Nuremberg trial that's going to take these guys out.
Absolutely.
I think all of us, you are not going to find any person.
Furthermore, that they should hunt down these Hamas leaders. First thing that Biden should be doing, if he means what he says, is he should say to Qatar, hand these people over.
No, but that's the problem that we've got right now.
Hunting
down these people, because this is not a war that's being fought in the way that Russia versus Ukraine, for example, is being fought. That war is being fought with boots on the ground. You have people wearing uniforms. You're able to tell the difference between civilians and combatants. And yes, you are.
And terrorists. I think combatants is soft.
I'm talking Ukraine. Don't get so caught up in the terminology that between combatants and civilians in Ukraine, you can tell the difference immediately. Mm. Now, you can't do the same thing in Gaza because the guy is wearing a T-shirt and he looks like anyone else, and you have no way of actually finding that particular person and rooting it out. Mm. And so now when you have...
And they've deliberately, Hamas has deliberately blurred those lines.
Absolutely.
So that you don't know.
Yes.
Who's
so,
who.
But... So you're fighting guerrilla warfare.
Yes.
Now, at the point at which you're fighting guerrilla warfare, from the Israeli point of view, you have an implacable enemy who is committed to your destruction. It's part of what they've got in their, actually, their founding articles.
Yes.
Say that
they don't hide the ball.
Yeah. So what is Israel supposed to do at the point at which you've got an enemy who is committed to your destruction?
You've been asking for solutions. Yes. What should they do? What do you see as the solution? Because you asked Bafana, but I mean, you must have some ideas.
Yeah, well, right now the solution from Israel's point of view is to do exactly what they've always been doing, which is to basically mow the lawn.
Are
you supporting the siege on Gaza? Is that the only solution?
Look, I'm saying right now that if I were Israeli, that would be the foremost strategy in my mind. And remember that the fundamental thing, guys, about understanding how to win these battles is you have to put yourself in the position of the players on both sides and ask yourself, in the scenario, what would I be doing?
And what is optimal and what is your worst case scenario?
Yes, yeah. So does Israel have a choice other than
what they're doing?
What they are doing right now.
And the answer is?
And the answer for me is no.
Okay.
At the same time, do I think it's going to work? The answer to that, again, for me, is no.
Right, because of the technological things that you were talking about.
It's because of the technological things and also because Israel just doesn't have enough boots on the ground.
Okay.
So they've got 300,000 people that they've now put together. They were about to march into Gaza to start a ground war.
True.
And suddenly Hezbollah assembles a couple of 100,000 people on the northern border.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So now what happens is that if you suddenly have Israel opening up a front on the Gaza Strip, you're now going to have a scenario where Hezbollah is able to suddenly come through from the north. Mm. And they don't have the manpower to be able to fight on both fronts at once.
So, but what is the solution? You're not going to say a solution yet.
I'm saying that the solution starts with a couple of things, and it goes back to the ancestral roots of this conflict. And actually not so much because of the fact that it's Jews versus
Arabs versus
Arabs. It's got everything to do with the fact that the reason why Iran is so implacably in favor of the destruction of Israel is because of the fact that the United States has for the longest time been in favor of the implacable destruction of Iran. Let's be very clear. Let me finish this point, okay?
Yes.
Because it goes back to this thing about understanding the mindsets of the various players that are involved.
Right.
Mm. Okay. Iran has been regime changed by the U.S. up until in the late mid-50s. The mid-50s, Gareth, firstly. Mm. Iran was a secular democracy.
Yeah, but they got rid of the Shah in the 70s.
Hang on a second. Don't get confused. Okay, we're going back to the 50s. So the U.S. first did a regime change in the 1950s. They then again did a regime change and put the Shah back in power in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Mm. And ever since the Ayatollahs came into power, you've had an Iran that's become more and more religiously fundamentalist and committed to the destruction of the United States, because the United States, for the longest time, has been doing everything in their power to actually undermine the state of Iran. And, you know, up until the Ukraine war, they were the most sanctioned country. Now, Iran, consider this. If you were in the position of Iran, here's what I would be thinking. Mm. Is Israel a proxy for the United States in this region?
To Iran, yes, absolutely it is.
Yes. Mm. And therefore, if I'm going to want to get back at the U.S., what is my point of entry? It has to be Israel. So now the solution that we need to be thinking of seriously comes down to the fact that we now have BRICS actually coming to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And in order for Iran to continue being a part of that that club, okay, and it is a club right now. Crucially, BRICS is not a military alliance, okay? It's sure. just an agreement yeah. to play by particular rules. But what we have seen is that China's role in particular has been to try and say, look, can we agree on cessation of hostilities under particular rules? And they've been able to do this between the Saudis and Iran. You're asking me for a solution, and I'm saying that I'm not saying it's a solution you're going to like, okay? But I am saying right now, the only part that I am seeing to this, there has to be a withdrawal of U.S. support
For Israel.
For Israel. And right now...
But it's impossible.
Then you condemn Israel.
It's impossible.
You don't?
You don't. I'll tell you why you don't. Because at the point at which you have that formal withdrawal of U.S. support and you allow Russia and China very specifically to become honest brokers within that region. So remember, up until now, Russia has installed S-400 missile defense systems in Syria.
Which I got from... Mm.
No, so these are Russia's S-400 missile defense systems. But Russia does not allow the S-400 missile defense systems to be used against incoming Israeli aircraft. Now, did you guys ever stop to ask why this is the case?
Why?
It's because of the fact that Putin has a very good relationship with Israel.
With Netanyahu.
Not only with Netanyahu. Okay, so remember at the time that the Ukraine war broke up.
Yes.
Who was the person who was the first go between? It was Bennett. Okay, because Bennett first went to Turkey. He had a meeting with the Ukrainians, and then he went to Russia, and he brokered what became that first peace agreement, which Boris Johnson then
scuppered. But God,
I'm saying I
beg to differ on the view that, which is, I think, is a view that I've seen even the first march that happened in South Africa. It went to the American embassy, and I said it can't be that we are going to reduce this to a mere proxy between the Americans and
Iranians.
Because in the 1950s, you mentioned the 1950s, but in the 1948 or 47, actually, when the UN was established and there was a partition plan, all Arab states did not recognize Israel to be established. I mean, all. In 48, almost seven or Arab states attacked Israel. This was even before there was.
But we know all this, I'm trying to show you
that the issue.
We've said all of this, and we've got like 10 minutes.
You've been speaking. Allow me to finish up.
Yeah. So take us forward.
Yes, I'm taking you forward. Yeah. I'm trying to correct this idea that America is a problem here. Actually, meanwhile, America is the party that keeps Israel alive. Because without America, probably the Arab world could have actually succeeded by literally pushing the Jews to the sea as they have claimed from river to the sea.
Can I ask a question?
What I'm saying is,
can I ask a question?
Before ask your question,
Chief, the 1967 war.
Chief, I gave you a time to talk. Allow me.
Go, Bafana.
Thank you.
Go.
So I think the reality here, it is that we are dealing with Arab against Jews. And that has been led by Iran.
Iran's and not an Arab country, by the
way. It's a patient, yes. But I'd rather say Muslim extremist, if that's the word to use.
You could even say there's that Shia Sunni.
Yeah, Shia Sunni.
So let me ask.
Pumi said, it's so complicated. Yes.
I'm not saying the issue here.
Let me ask my question.
Americans, I think you are right when you say there's a death to Israel, death to America slogan in the Middle
East. Just answer this one question.
But then, okay, Israel.
1967.
What is this question?
Okay, 1967.
Very important. Sure.
Okay, the 1967, the Six-Day War.
Yes.
What role did America play in the Six-Day War?
Israelis attacked first. They were very, very much independent.
I know.
There was no American influence there.
No, what was my question?
Israel took it.
What role
did America? They didn't play any role at that point.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
Israel very successfully defended themselves. And not only that, do you remember the USS Liberty?
Yes.
The ship.
Yeah.
The ship, yes.
Yeah, the USS Liberty.
Yes.
Okay. American naval carrier. What happened to it?
I don't remember.
I don't know.
It was taken out by Israel. Okay. Because the Americans sent carriers to the Middle East, but they did not intervene on the part of Israel.
Okay.
They refused to intervene. And I'm saying right now that the fuck up that we've got in Israel at this moment is because of the fact that the US took 300,000 rounds of ammunition from Israel and shipped it off to Ukraine. And those 300,000 rounds of ammunition had been placed in Israel precisely to avoid a scenario that you've got right now, where if there's going to be an invasion, that the Israelis are not able to defend themselves. So this idea that the U.S. Is going to save anyone.
I don't think it's ideal to actually try to say the whole issue here, it's U.S. I think we need to accept
exactly
that.
All right, but Canton, logically, sensibly here, if power abhors a vacuum, if America, who is, in your own opinion, the major player on the one side, and Iran, who's the major player on the other, and you're saying China or Russia could be an honest broker here, you remove the one side's kind of big player, then the other side is going to take complete advantage of that. And you think Israel, who you've already told us don't have enough boots on the ground, will be able to survive the onslaught from north and south and with Iran backing it?
So
it'll be the end.
So here's something that I've said on the show before, okay, that if Trump had still been sitting in office, this shit would not have happened.
No, of course not.
I'm very clear about this. And I'm also very clear about the fact that if Trump had been in office at this point right now, Americans would already have had boots on the ground, and they would be doing door-to-door reconnaissance throughout Gaza at the moment. They would be pulling out every single person. They would be hauling all of them off to Guantanamo Bay for interrogation, all 2 million of them. And they would go very specifically
including the million
that process. Okay, but what you've got right now in the United States, okay, is you've got this doddering senile fuckwit, okay, who is not able to answer questions at a press conference, is firmly committed to the the anti-Israel factions, I should say, within his own political party.
And there are a lot of those in this very concern.
And I'm saying right now, okay, and understand that I want Israel to survive this. This is the most crucial thing from my perspective.
But you're saying these things.
It seems unlikely based on what you said.
I don't think you want Israel to survive by removing America from the
insanity
equation.
Insanity is doing the same thing.
But Gunter, you can't say you want Israel to survive by removing the Americans in the equation. You're ready. Okay.
Hold on, guys. I want to ask Pumi, how close are we to World War III and how can it be prevented? Because all of this, if it boils out of control, Pums, this is very dangerous. And everybody who says here in South Africa, oh, this is not our problem, it's something that's happening far away, not true.
Not true. It's very
this involves
near.
Everyone
if,
on
if
Earth.
If you are worried about the price of eggs today, imagine what happens when a world war breaks out. No, because we are very close. We are very close to a world war. Because I do also think that one thing we haven't spoken a lot about in this show now is the shifting sands in that Middle East. You know, when you think about the, Canton said, the children of Abraham, the Abraham Accords, it's not coincidence that this war breaks out literally a week after the UAE is signing a normalization agreement with Israel, which again, for Iran, they feel even more isolated, and it creates for them a need to do something very quickly. And they have destabilized the entire environment now. But we're very close to
it. I mean, there was hope with the Abraham Accords. I won't lie to you. There was peace coming to the Middle East.
Let's just give credit where it's due. I think that's a very good point, Bafana. Like, is Jared Kushner not one of the best diplomats of the last 50 years?
He was. In my book, he was. I mean,
I agree wholeheartedly.
I agree on that. I think with the Abraham Accords coming in, seeing more normalization with most Arab states, you look at countries like former
Bahrain
coming into Israel. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, right now the Saudis, we're just about to jump in this. Mm-hmm. This could have been a very good deal for Israel. And this could have been the Arab League as well. I think if they can unite and say, guys, let's broker a peace deal for our brothers that side. Let's try to work something around this. This could actually produce peace.
And the Abraham Accords were the most brilliant piece of diplomacy that we've seen in, you know, more than half a century.
Yes.
And what's also very clear is that at the point at which Biden came into office, the first thing he did was to say that MBS is a terrorist and must be taken out and brought to trial.
What a stupid thing to do.
And what did he do? He drove
over what, Khashoggi or something, right?
Yeah, over Khashoggi. So he drove the Saudis into partnership now with Iran. And this is why I keep coming back to the fact, you know, people are saying in the comments, I want Israel to fight with one hand behind its back. No, I'm saying that Israel cannot count on the U.S.
True.
And I'm saying that Israel has to find other people who are willing.
No one can count on the U.S.
That's exactly right. We've seen in the last little while, if you were in Afghanistan trying to hang on to those planes as they were flying out of Bagram. You can imagine how being an ally with the U.S. is no longer a guarantee of anything.
True. But then for Israel, unsettling, the U.S. has been that friend that will say, I'll come to you at any cost. I will come and defend you at any cost, right?
But
even with this conflict, they already moved quite very, very fast to actually come to defense of Israel.
All right.
So I think that Israel and U.S. must stick together, even though you can rely on them totally. But I believe right now at this point, this is the only partner or superpower that we can maybe rely on for a while, but obviously not for a long run.
Well, maybe Canton's point about how the U.S. isn't Israel's next best hope is something they're considering. They probably are. There are a lot of smart people who are looking at all the options now. How do we avoid World War III? Somebody here, you all have a chance. Go ahead. Anybody for me? Canton? Bafana, any ideas?
Look, the only way we avoid World War III is if Iran and Hezbollah do not directly intervene in this conflict. If they do intervene in the conflict, we've got World War III. Because at that point, just because of the sheer force of numbers, Israel has no choice but to use nukes. Simple.
For me, maybe I'm more of a Mandela, but I believe that if the Palestinians, the Israelis, and the Iran and whoever can actually try to broker a deal, that would be the deal of the century, maybe for the Middle East. Maybe that can work. If Abraham Accords almost worked, maybe we can look at a better deal, another deal that can actually work. But I don't think that going into war.
If Trump wins the election next year, the only way
we avoid a World War III. Is if Israel pulls a Munich and goes into Qatar and cuts the head of the snake with Hamas, because the only reason that Hezbollah has been emboldened is by watching the chaos that has unfolded in Gaza.
It's true. I actually support that as well. Let's rather go and get Hamas out, hunt Hamas, finish them off. But then would they be the last one? Because there's also Palestinian Islamic Jihad. There is also Hezbollah in the north border. And they keep on popping up all these groups. So
Israel has always had a stance that is a heavy stance that says, as long as the other side understands that nine of theirs for every one of ours, is the only the way that we're going to keep ourselves safe. This is Israel's stance. And I think this
the biggest U.S. military base in the Middle East is in Qatar, guys. So that tells you how much of a friend they are.
All right. Good point. I want to hold everything for just a second and bring it to South Africa. We've also got our cameras just froze because there was so much fractious energy in the room that Ryan has to now reset the cameras or something. He can't squeeze himself past Canton in all of his regalia. Okay. So quickly, to bring it home, Sure. What about our involvement? What about South Africa? What about what our president has said? What about what Naledi Pandor has said? Mm. Bafana, you go first.
Sure. I think that South Africa is pushing this in a very wrong way, on the fact that they are trying to somehow compare this to the apartheid regime of South Africa back in the day. I think it's very far-fetched. I think this war with its history, what we have discussed here for the past 45 minutes, is nothing compared to what South Africa went through during the apartheid regime and the freedom fighters of Tambo and Chris Hani. Mm-hmm. And also, I feel like the ANC is imposing their... I feel like the ANC is imposing their stance, which is purely ideological, purely friendship based on the struggle back in the 80s or 70s when they met with the PLO in Moscow. But this has nothing to do with the apartheid history. South Africa is slowly making themselves look in... What's the word to use? They can't be relied upon to broker peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis already they have chosen a side. And to have Naledi Pandor calling a terrorist organization in that manner, that was very appalling. We need to make sure that we remove the apartheid label on Israel. I think our history is very unique to our people, and our history here was basically based on black and white. Meanwhile, on Israelis, it's very much different. It's about the Jewish state existing in the Middle East and the Arab neighbors, even the Palestinians, rejecting that to realize and recognize that there is a Jewish state and it will exist.
All right, Canton, you've spoken about how you think Naledi Pandor should at least be talking.
I'm saying that everyone should be talking to Hamas, and that's not to say
you're not saying cut their heads off like Pumi.
No. I'm saying that the fundamental role, if you want to be a broker, is you need to be able to have channels of communication to both sides.
Mm. Cyril,
but Cyril, Kanta,
no. So hang on a second. So
Kanta,
yeah, no.
What I'm saying is, if you are saying that, right? Already in Israeli terms, Hamas is not a partner to peace; it's a terrorist. How do you position yourself by actually calling a Hamas terrorist as a minister of DECO? Are you not publicly or just you declaring war on Israel as well as a partner of Hamas?
You know, this is too much along the lines of if you're not with us, then you're against us.
No,
I think South Africa.
And this is exactly why we've never been able to have resolution to this. The first thing in terms of resolving any conflict is you need to have open channels to both sides. And open channels doesn't mean that you are supporting either side.
Or that you're giving them
equanimity. Yes, but open channels means that you have the ability at any given stage to pick up the phone and say,
what I'm saying is, she didn't call Netanyahu. She didn't even call the ambassador.
Can I just say?
Yes.
South Africa has completely lost...
Yeah.
For a very long time, the moral ground.
You ask me what I think you ask me what I think we should be doing, and then you immediately pile on me.
We have listened to you tell us what you think should be happening for a good part of this show. And all I'm saying.
He took the show.
is that South Africa, unfortunately, does not have the moral standing in this fight.
It does not.
Secondly. South Africa has a whole lot of its own shit to deal with. Mm. And that's what they should be concentrating on. But this is a great distraction for everybody from their failings. The ANC is using this to distract us all from their own failings as a government in this country.
The distraction's entirely a media narrative.
I think you knocked it out. The distraction in this case
absolutely is a media narrative. But guys, let's be very clear. Okay, South Africa is not going to be the broker of peace here.
No.
Okay, but BRICS.
They will never.
But BRICS could.
But BRICS could. And right now, BRICS is the only player in the world that could actually be brokering any sort of peace out there.
But what I'm saying to you.
And I'm very happy for you
to
say
that. On the issue of channels, right? Yeah. I'm saying if Naledi could have said, I'm calling your terrorist or Hamas, as you want to justify that, but also then call Netanyahu or maybe calling the ambassador here in Pretoria to her office.
That would be nice. We should shut down the embassy.
Rather than you saying boycott Israel, boycott Israeli products. Naledi is becoming an activist for Palestine using the seat of the Minister of DECO. She is not in any way playing a diplomatic role.
And exactly the same way.
On Russia and Ukraine, exactly, in Russia and Ukraine, we were non-aligned, as you claimed, right?
Yeah, we said so.
We said so. And this is the part where we have to...
And she said the same in terms of her statement around this.
She's very clear, lady. We need to boycott Israel. It's an oppressive regime. She's always been clear on how she hates Israel, right? Mm-hmm. So you cannot then claim that what the call to Hamas was somehow opening channels. No, it's a very clear call of solidarity with the people they've been supporting for all these years. It has nothing to do with diplomacy. Because if it's about diplomacy, he could have called the Israeli side.
Stop with Israel-Palestine for a second. Pumi said something just now.
Yes.
It's a distraction. You said it's a media narrative, which I think you're both on the money here, but what are they distracting us from, Pumi? That's the important question.
That's the thing they have completely failed us.
That's the thing that's going to affect all of us most importantly in the next couple of months. We've got an election coming up. Yes. Everybody's talking about it, even though we don't know. It might be sometime in May.
Not really sure, yeah.
And people in this country talk about distractions. We're even distracted by gossip. It doesn't take a lot to distract South Africans. Perhaps the scariest realization I've had in the last 2 weeks is that despite my own very strong feelings on this situation, and clearly you guys are full of strong feelings about this too, which I love, but my God, there are a lot of people who just don't care. There are a lot of young people in the world who are completely apathetic to all of this.
Sure. True.
What is that? Because that is, to me, the big elephant in the room that no one seems to be talking about. You ask young people, I'm talking old, young, white, black, rich, poor. I'm talking about all kinds. Ask them about this. Very, very, very superficial answers, if any. And most are too terrified to say anything in case they are seen to be on one side and the person asking the question is on the other.
I think for what I've seen for a couple of years, some of us were introduced to this conflict because we are politically activists and we are members of the ANC. You know, you had the scarf like Gunter here, right? Mm. But then in terms of the local underground people, they don't even care. Most Christians, it's more about this is our holy land. Jesus is from there. The Bible is from there. We stand with Israel without any historical facts or what's happening on the ground. Also, there is a view that... ANC then tends to impose this idea, and it's very easy to say, just like South Africa's during apartheid, so we must support Palestine.
It's victim.
Yes, because we know apartheid, because they say apartheid Israel, automatically you feel aligned to the struggle. But when you realize the history behind all of this conflict, there is no way that we can be compared to what is happening in the Middle East. So, yes, young people are apathetic to what's happening in the Middle East, not even they have a clue who's Hamas, who don't even have a clue who's Netanyahu, but all they hear, it's just like South Africans during apartheid, we must support this.
That is wrong and it's
misleading and it's malicious. Right.
And it's not going to help us solve the problem.
And it's not going to help us solve the problem. No,
but if you say it's wrong, it's malicious, agreed. It doesn't help us solve the problem.
Okay, so last thoughts, because you've all been shouting at each other for the last, not you, Pumi, I accept you, but I like that Bafana and Canton have been shouting at each other. And a lot of what you've been saying is stuff that people either have been thinking themselves, or in the case of the technology argument that you made earlier and the way that warfare has changed, I think this is very valid and useful information for people to input into their models in their heads, because otherwise we're not going to move forward. And these are realities that are starting to dawn on people too. I mean, the idea that you could paraglide in to an area where people are at a music concert and then immediately mow them down with machine guns, this is as revolutionary as flying planes into the World Trade Center in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And this was Israel's 9/11, if we're going to make comparisons like Munich about taking
this. Yes, and in terms of per capita deaths, it's
the biggest since the Holocaust.
And it's significantly worse than 9/11 at a number of levels.
Absolutely. True. All right, so last word. I'm going to go Pumi first. And then
I want to go last.
You want to go last.
Fighter.
Why are you two associating her with Busisiwe Mkhwebane? This is very unfair. Just because she's a black woman? What is this?
Because I'm black?
All right.
No, go ahead for me.
Bafana, you know, you can start. You can start. Just your overall thoughts. You've got like a minute or two. We've already gone over time, but this is important.
You know, I think, Gareth, if you want to broker peace, I'm going to go back to the idea that engage with partners, people, possible partners towards delivering that peace. Secondly, South Africa must just remove our history from this. It's not helping anyone. It's just fueling the fire across the world and is actually demonizing Jews. And we have seen a high rise of anti-Semitism as a result of people actually trying to use the apartheid energy to say, okay, Jews are evil.
Well, we had people at the Sydney Opera House, forgive my interruption, shouting gas the Jews.
My point exactly. You have people saying Hitler should have finished them all. So when you hear all of these things, people are using the apartheid to say the apartheid regime, they're oppressors, whatever, all these catchy words. But the truth of the matter is that until we deal with this war honestly, full appreciation of its history, then we can find peace. But as long as we are pushing propaganda machinery on both sides, we are only going to fuel fire. And that fire, sadly, it puts the Jewish community at all the time on the stance of you are evil, Satanist, all these anti-Semitic things that you have heard, even from the Palestinian leaders that are actually indoctrinating their children to say these are evil people, they drink blood. So I'm saying peace must be realized. Ehud Olmert tried in 2008. He gave the Palestinians all the land that they wanted. He gave them 95% of the West Bank and Gaza, and they said no to that. So let the Palestinians at this time, with the Arab world, unite and propose a peace deal that will work. But Israel must stand, will stand.
Okay, Canton?
Consider the fact right now that you have ISIS on the one hand and you have Hamas on the other hand. And I tell people that, you know, they're not cut from the same cloth, but they sing from the same hymn sheet. Mm. And the reason why I think that Russia is the only player that militarily is capable of being an honest broker here is because Russia has been committed to the eradication of ISIS. And they've actually been doing so on the ground in Syria and in other parts
of the world. But Joe Biden's been telling us for the last 3 years that Russia's the most evil superpower that's ever existed.
Until we have this shift that goes away from kowtowing to the Americans and talking about American exceptionalism, realizing that there's a shift in power that's taking place around the world. Understand right now that Iran has hypersonic missiles that are capable of flattening Tel Aviv. Let's be very clear about
that. But then can you really trust Russia? Meanwhile, it has obviously declared support for Palestine.
The question of whether or not you can trust Russia is not the point. We've already established that we can't trust the United States. We then have to We've already established that you can't trust the United States.
Yes.
When you look in terms of who has, firstly, the capacity fundamentally to be able to broker just simply based on the fact that they have the experience, the technological capability to do so, and that they are a relatively disinterested party. And that's why I'm saying that the only people that you can actually rely on to be honest brokers between all sides.
Kerfball, the Russians.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Pumi, last word. And I've got like, we've got to hurry this. So you've got it. You're the Russians.
I can't believe that in 2023, we still have to use the slogan we grew up with in the 90s that says peace in the Middle East.
Yeah.
On that note, we draw it to a close this morning. A nice fiery burning platform. It's not called that for no reason. Thanks, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Thank you, Canton Pumi. Thank you, Bafana. And most especially, thank you to you. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye. Cliffcentral.com